It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplexes and at the art house.
Warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area.
You'll also hear about new and old films on Blu-ray and on DVD. Plus, you'll hear all the latest Hollywood gossip.
I don't care!
Okay, maybe not the latter, but it is time for Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Shizzy!
No, that's Matthew Sosi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's see how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosi.
Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Sosi. The show is available as a podcast, and it's also available on iTunes. A little later on in the show, we will hear an interview done by film sociology correspondent McKenna Mays. She'll be chatting with Greg Sorvig, the director of film programming for Heartland Film. So that'll be a little bit later on. I usually have Greg on for the film festival. This was a reminder, I can have him on any time of the year. There are just certain guests that are like that. So anyway, we'll get to that in a little bit, but one of the big films of 2018 opened this week, and I believe nothing else is opening up against it, and probably why would they? One of the more anticipated films, as I said, and it's anticipated in the Marvel Universe, Black Panther. This is, of course, Chadwick Boseman as the title role, supported by Michael B. Jordan, Lupita Nyong'o, Martin Freeman, Danielle Kaluuya, Forrest Whitaker, Andy Serkis. You get to see him in this one, Angela Bassett, and a slew of others. And it's co-written and directed by Ryan Coogler, who has already established himself with Fruitvale Station and Creed. So he's worked with Mr. Jordan on a couple times. Think about this with Chadwick Boseman. He has played James Brown, Jackie Robinson, Thurgood Marshall, and now Black Panther. And he's not 40 yet. That's really cool. This is set in the nation of Wakanda, which is, as you watch the film, it's a mixture of something old and something new. I've said that before. Of African landscape along with really cool technology, and the Chadwick Boseman character T'Challa is supposed to be the next king, and but the Michael B. Jordan character has some other plans with that kingdom in mind. This is the most Shakespearean superhero film since the first Thor, because of power, betrayal, family, secrets. All of this is a part of that. The film looks great. As I said, there's beautiful costumes. I mean, it's a combination of traditional African garb and CG stuff. Overall, it's about maybe 2 hours, 15 minutes. Some of the action scenes are a little scattered, but solid roster of performances. Chadwick Boseman has a nice leisure to him. The film is funny without being jokey. And unless you're Tony Stark, a lot of the humor at times feels forced. That is not the case here. I saw it in 3D, not necessarily needed in 3D. The fight scenes, there's a couple of two-man fight scenes that are really fun to watch. There's also a mixture of CG action along with basically folks fighting with sticks. And, yes, armored rhinoceroses. So it is a lot of fun, not heavy, not too heavy-handed. Again, not too sticky. And it's a really good standalone. I have a daughter at home that is worried that she has to watch the entire Marvel Universe filmography, even though she did enjoy Deadpool and Doctor Strange, and it's in that category. So, yes, people from this film are going to wind up in the Infinity, Civil, whatever, all the, you know, the big giant battle royal Marvel films, of course, and they already have in previous. But you can enjoy this one in and of itself. And it's a good, really good, not necessarily great, but a really good action film worth checking out. So that is that's the big title in theaters. Down at IU Cinema, again, depending on when you're listening to this show, if you can make it at 3 o'clock on Saturday, the Charlie Chaplin masterpiece City Lights from 1931, the 1972 documentary A Sense of Loss at 7 o'clock, Sunday the 18th, the 2012 documentary Sweet Dreams at 3 o'clock, and Jodie Foster in Contact at 6:30 p.m. A lot of mansplaining in this film, directed by Bob Zemeckis. Monday the 19th, By the Time It Goes Dark at 7 p.m., On Thursday the 22nd, Our Heavenly Bodies with live music by Coupler, the 1925 film, at 7 o'clock. Friday the 23rd, the 2017 drama Zama at 6:30 p.m. and the 1969 film Change of Mind at 9:30 p.m. And then Saturday the 24th of February at 3 o'clock, Robert Altman's Nashville at 3 o'clock and Zama at 7 p.m. And also mark your calendars, Monday, February 26th at 3 p.m. as a part of the Monday Matinees Classics, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. So you can see Brick, not closeted in this one. Well, it's implied a little bit, but not enough. But really good performances from Paul Newman and Elizabeth Taylor. Okay, over at the Historic Art Craft Theater, and on Friday and Saturday, the 23rd and 24th, 2 and 7:30 p.m., The First Shrek. And then Friday and Saturday, March 2nd and 3rd, Fridays at 7:30 p.m., Saturday at 2:30, 5, and 7:30 p.m., the Best of the Fest, the Heartland International Film Festival Best of the Fest. You'll hear a little bit more of this with McKenna and Greg in a little bit. New on DVD and Blu-ray this week, new on home video this week. A film that received an Academy Award nomination, another film that became a kind of a surprise minor hit, as well it should. Anyway, but the title it is on video with an Academy Award nomination, Roman J. Israel, Esquire. This is the one that has Denzel Washington nominated for Best Actor, written and directed by Dan Gilroy. Denzel plays a defense attorney who's great in the office, not so great in the courtroom. And a series of events, including the main head of the firm, of his law firm, who winds up getting into the hospital, who's hospitalized. And not only does Israel have to go to court, but also do some other things that will lead to an ethical crossroads for Denzel's character. As I said, it's written and directed by Dan Gilroy, who is written, he received an Academy Award nomination for Nightcrawler, also directed that. That's the one with Jake Gyllenhaal, another ethical dilemma film. But he also wrote Two for the Money, Real Steel, Kong Skull Island, The Bourne Legacy, and The Fall. And what this film does as far as the ethical and moral dilemmas does a good job. Denzel winds up working under the guidance of Colin Farrell, another high-profile lawyer who's a little cleaner, a little slicker, and they kind of ruffle feathers a little bit. But anyway, you have to see the rest to get through that. I think one of the reasons why Denzel got a nomination for this performance, partially because he was going against type. He plays a very eccentric, introverted character although outspoken in court, listening to headphones constantly. Not the cleanest afro in the world, not the greatest clothes in the world, huge glasses. So it's kind of Denzel's version of de-glamorizing himself, a bit of a paunch. And it's also a character he's not played before, very twitchy, very on edge at times. And I think because of the bells and whistles of twitching and quirks, probably because for me, I wouldn't have nominated him. I would have put Harry Dean Stanton in his spot. And I still think Harry Dean Stanton should have been nominated and should have won. But it's something different from Denzel. And bully for him on that. I know this show has chewed him out for doing a lot of action movies and getting a lot of money for his charm and demeanor. And then hearing within the last couple of years that he wants to produce all of the August Wilson plays onto film, and then doing a great job directing and starring in the film version of Fences. So if this leads to more items like that, I'm all for it. So a good film. Also, also on video this week, Wonder. This is the film that makes you believe that Julia Roberts and Owen Wilson are a couple, as we joked about at my house, but there's nothing wrong with that. But this is a boy, the young boy who goes into, after being homeschooled his whole life, goes into school for fifth grade. He has facial differences. He had a slew of surgeries growing up. And we all know how cruel kids can be. And that's what he has to deal with. So... Nice performance by Jacob Tremblay as the boy. Appeared, he was the kid in Room. Yes, that one. And it gave me a lot of flashbacks of MASH, or not MASH, of Mask, the Eric Stoltz film with Peter Bogdanovich, Cher, and Sam Elliott. It almost feels like a prequel if the kid's parents were instead Julia Roberts and Owen Wilson and not Cher as a biker mom with an addiction problem. As my family was watching this, we've seen films like this before where you have to overcome a physical setback of one way, shape, or form, although the kid is fine. He's also very, very smart. So it's breaking barriers, making friends, dealing with bullies. We've seen this material before, but what I didn't know about... what I didn't know about the story itself, and I believe it is based on a novel, is that we get the child experience, this boy's experience, Augie's experience, from different points of view, from the older sister. Now, normally when you have a family film like this, the little kid is the main focal point. The parents are kind of punchlines. The older siblings are usually eye-rolling and clueless or self-centered. And it feels like that early on, but it winds up expanding, and we get the points of view from a friend that he makes early in school, his sister, and other characters. So that makes it different. The film was co-written and directed by Stephen Chbosky, hope I'm saying that right, best known for writing and directing The Perks of Being a Wallflower. He also did the screenplay for The Last Beauty and the Beast. So it's familiar territory, nicely stated, underplayed performances by Julia Roberts. Julia gets to be the concerned mom, although not too overly protective. By the way, gang, I think it's about two-thirds of the way through the film before she finally lets her hair down and we get Julia Roberts' hair. Owen Wilson gets to be the jokey dad to try to lighten tension at home. Mandy Patinkin is in the film as one of the parents, or actually one of the teachers, I should say. I haven't had my coffee. And as my daughter pointed out, David Diggs of Hamilton fame is in the film as well. So good one to watch with the whole family. A couple other Blu-ray titles. Criterion has finally put out on Blu-ray Silence of the Lambs. And now, ladies and gentlemen, you can own on Criterion Blu-ray Night of the Living Dead. So after this, I don't think you have to buy Night of the Living Dead ever again. Also, George Romero's Eaten Alive, as well as The Ballad of Lefty Brown. That's with Bill Pullman, and it's the story of what happens if the sidekick in the traditional Western movie has to become the hero. All of those are on video. Go check those out. All right. I want to pay tribute to a couple of dead people we like, because we never have time for dead people we don't like, and I didn't get a chance to get to this last week, so I apologize. But actor John Mahoney passed away last week, and of course, yes, best known for playing the dad on Frasier and appearing in, my goodness, going all the way back to films like Code of Silence, Streets of Gold, Tin Men, Moonstruck, Suspect, Eight Men Out, another, well, of course, shot here in Indianapolis, The Russia House, The Dad and Say Anything, and I'll get to that in a second. Of course, W.P. Mayhew and Barton Fink, In the Line of Fire, Hudsucker Proxy, Reality Bites, Primal Fear, one of the voices in Ants and the Iron Giant, and among others. So, obviously best known as Martin Crane. Fun to know that he actually was born in England, which adds even more to his mystique of playing the blue-collar, beer-chugging dad of Fraser and Niles Crane. But I need to revisit Say Anything again, because I think all I know of that is John Cusack's a little stocky, and the scene with the boombox. But I think what I remember besides that is, if it weren't for John Mahoney and that side plot about the girl and her dad, without John Mahoney, I think Say Anything is just another John Hughes film. So I need to go through that again and verify. And then we want to salute Johan Johansson, the Icelandic film score composer, who passed away on February 9th, received two Academy Award nominations for Sicario as well as The Theory of Everything. That's right. And other films of note, kind of got noticed in the States in 2013 for doing Prisoners, but also, as I mentioned, Sicario, Arrival, and the film Mandy, which comes out in 2018, as well as the film In the Blood. So, good soundtracks. Just check them out. You definitely should. All right, catching up on films that have been sent to me. I'm gonna get caught up one of these days. It's a never ending process. This one, courtesy of Film Movement. After The Hunger Games and Divergent and The Maze Runner, and I haven't even seen all of these, but I've had more than had my fill of dystopian films. And I know we're living in those times, and these are going to be very popular in lieu of the everyday climate. But there's another one that came out on Film Movement called The White King, and it's the story of a young man who's growing up in a dictatorship. His dad is taken away to prison, and just he and his mother trying to survive. A couple actors of note, Jonathan Pryce, Greta Scacchi, Fiona Shaw are in this. It's a low-budget film, but it's smartly shot that way. It's maintained to a couple of different locations, especially out in the woods. So it has a good look to it, but it's a story I've seen time and time again. And it's almost like if you combined Hope and Glory with Hunger Games or Divergent or Maze Runner. So, however, on the flip side, a really fun film from the Caribbean, actually the Columbia portion of the Caribbean, a film called Bad Lucky Goat. And it's a story of an inspiring young musician who, with his overbearing older sister, they wind up accidentally running over a goat, which causes a series of bad luck events. Except for the dead goat part, this has the feeling on paper as a Disney film, but we also have the goat's owner, some questionable businessmen dealing with what happens when you wreck your dad's car, and then also the brother sister relationship. It's short at 76 minutes, and it has great footage of Colombia's Caribbean coast. And then it's funny at times. It's supposed to be a comedy. I think I smiled more when I laughed, but it's a well done, different, offbeat family film, which is what we look for. And yeah, there's involving a dead goat carcass, and it's not Weekend at Bernie's. Also on video now, and this is from director Hal Roach and Hal Roach Jr. The only time they worked together, I believe, and it's the film 1 Million BC. No, not the one with Raquel Welch. That's 1 Million Years BC. That was a remake of this 1940s film called 1 Million BC with Victor Mature, Carol Landis, Lon Chaney Jr. And the film received a couple of Academy Award nominations, one for visual effects, special effects, I should say, and one for its score. And it's basically the story, prehistoric story of a prehistoric family trying to be a family, dealing with neighbors that you don't like, and dealing with the giant creatures that roamed the earth at that time. We have to remember that in 1940, the technology for split screen or meshing of, you have a regular sized human up against a screen with a giant lizard, among other things, or whatever armor they can put on reptiles to pose as prehistoric creatures. And that's stuff we kind of made fun of in the 50s and 60s, especially with Mystery Science Theater, especially really bad technology, you know, bad special effects at that time. But for 1940, pretty good. And yeah, there's a few moments that we chuckle, but in the historical context, it works. Now, with all that in mind, I know I'd brought up before Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, but I actually went through and watched the special features. There is a commentary track with the writer and director, and the writer and one of the stars, as well as another creator. They don't take themselves too seriously in the commentary track, and that's okay. There's also a Where Are They Now segment with some of the actors. There's an off chance, ladies and gentlemen, that I might get one of the actors from this film on Film Sociology. There's a cliffhanger for you, so stay tuned. But there's, and as well as the impact that the film had for its time, because this was before Airplane, and I think I said about previous shows, this feels like a Kentucky Fried Movie sketch, only it's 87 minutes long. I think if it were 70 minutes, it'd be even funnier. But it's, for what it is, you're not going to get a Bergman or Fellini film with a film like Attack of the Killer Tomatoes. It makes fun of the 50s Attack of the Killer fill in the blanks and the Godzilla movies and the King Kong knockoffs. So it makes fun of all of those in a PG way. So, and I have it on Blu-ray, so I like that. All right, we are going to take a short break. And when we come back after the break, McKenna Mays is going to talk to Greg Sorvig, the director of film programming for Heartland Film. So you don't want to miss that. Stick around. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
Jones, and you're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI.
And yes, very soon we will get to my Oscar picks. It'll be the weekend before. Thanks, Doug. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Socey. Okay, McKenna Mays, the student correspondent, my intern, here at Film Sociology this semester, recently sat down with Greg Sorvig, the director of film programming for Heartland Film, to talk about, well, there's an event coming up at the Art Craft Theater, which we talked about before, as well as the festival in general and the organization in general. Enjoy.
All right. Can you tell me a little bit about Heartland Film?
Yeah, Heartland Film is a nonprofit arts organization, been around now 27 years, so founded in 1991. Our mission is to inspire filmmakers and audiences through the transformative power of film. So what that means, we really provide movie-going experiences from the Heartland International Film Festival, New Indie Shorts, All Short Film Film Festival, Cultural Journey and other events, and an industry award called the Truly Moving Picture Award that really tells viewers, hey, this is a cool movie you should check out.
And Heartland International Film Festival is kind of like your big event in October, but do you have anything coming up soon?
Yeah, definitely. I know you're from Franklin, so we have Best of the Fest down at the Historic Art Craft Theater. We've come on and really, we've had a great partnership with them over the years, but basically we show about four festival favorites every year. So we have a movie called The Storyteller, which was an Indiana Spotlight Audience Choice Award winner. They have this cool Cartoons for Cans promotion where they show old Looney Tunes cartoons. We thought, hey, let's ride that train. So we're showing some kids shorts, doing the unimaginable journey of Peter Ertel, who's about this guy in World War II who kind of had a fight on the side of Hitler for a little bit. It's a really fascinating story. And our Audience Choice Award-winning film called I'll Push You. And then after that, in April, we have an event called Cultural Journey Mexico, which is 4 days of culture, cuisine, and cinema of a respective country. Last year, we did India. Now we're going to Mexico, and it's a great way to give a movie-going experience to a certain community who maybe doesn't feel represented in anything else that's going on in town.
All right, and the film festival in general, how would you kind of describe it to somebody who's never been there?
It's an amazing experience, and it makes you appreciate kind of the stream of content that we have out there now, meaning there's so much stuff you can watch and look at. But hey, you can go, you focus this with other film lovers, you meet people in the industry, the filmmakers who make these films. You might see some big stars like Robert Downey Jr., Rob Reiner, but you're going to see some fantastic movies in network. Pretty much just like going to a film school over a course of 10 days, 11 days, and just having a great time. A lot of good, even if you don't like movies, you can come and socialize, enjoy Sun King beer. There's something for everyone.
Okay. And it's your 27th anniversary. Are you doing anything special for that?
At this point, well, the neat thing is that we expanded to an all-new shorts festival, which will be in July 27th, 26th through the 29th, excuse me, at Newfields. So basically, imagine like the claw machine. We just took all the short film content from the main festival and moved it over to the shorts fest. So all the same awards will be there. We're an Oscar-qualifying film festival, so whoever wins our narrative short from Indie Shorts will get Oscar qualification for the next year's Oscars. And then all of the winners will play again at the main festival in October.
Okay. And you've actually expanded this to high schools, correct?
Yeah, we've had the high school film competition. I believe it's in its eighth year at this point. And our pride and joy, I'll say at this point, her name is Carol. She won our high school film competition 2 out of 3 times. And she was in the competition 3 years. She's gone on. She was actually a juror for us for the high school competition last year. She was chosen of one of just a couple dozen students for the Sundance Ignite program. And she was featured as a young female filmmaker in Toronto International Film Festival's last event as well. So she's going places, and it's neat to say that she got her start at Heartland. So, yeah, anybody who has a high school film, you can win these prizes. We have an Indiana Doc Narrative winner and worldwide Doc Narrative winner, and they compete for the grand prize.
What is the submission process for anybody who would want to enter the film festival?
Yeah, we tried to streamline it this year. We have exclusively take submissions through an online portal called filmfreeway.com. So if you have a feature film, 41 minutes plus, you submit to Heartland International Film Festival at filmfreeway.com. If it's 40 minutes or under, it's considered a short film, and that would be submitted via Film Freeway for the Indie Shorts Fest. But, yeah, we have early bird deadlines, so the less time, or less you procrastinate, the more money you save. And if I really like you or you come from a country with no money or something like that, I take pity on you and I might give you a waiver or something like that. So.
Okay. And have there any bit, like, you've been involved in this in a while. Have there been any kind of, like, standout or notable films or shorts? Do you have any favorites?
Yeah, I'll tell you. So I'm the director of film programming, but I'll give mad props to Abby Specht. On staff, cause she's our head shorts programmer, and Julie Landrum, who's been an amazing volunteer programmer as well too. But it seems like every year we average about 3 Oscar nominated short films, which is crazy, and you just never know. They just come organically through the process. A lot of the film festivals might curate content or see something, say, hey, we want that, but over 90% of our films come from this organic process through Film Freeway and that kind of stuff too. Of course, you love meeting the celebrities and stuff. I remember an instance when I was backstage with a book thief with Oscar winner Jeffrey Rush. I asked him how many times he'd seen himself in animatronic form since he added him to Pirates of the Caribbean at Disney World and Disneyland. He said only once, but he's excited maybe someday that his grandkids will still be able to see him and this stuff too. Robert Downey Jr. was a super nice guy. We're about the same height, so that makes me feel excited about my prospects for the future. I could be Iron Man someday. Who knows when he retires, I can step into his shoes for the Iron Man 28 or whatever it is at that point too. Rob Reiner was fantastic. He's been at the festival twice now, but he came last year with LBJ. We did a anniversary screening of The Princess Bride to Stand By Me. He is the person you see is who you get, and that's something that Hollywood and celebrities don't have a rap for. It's all about kind of PR and maybe your persona, especially now with social media and portraying yourself in a certain way. But he was he was fantastic. He's exactly who you think he'd be.
And in moments like that, do you get a little starstruck?
Well, I'll tell you what. I think our artistic director stepped down a few years ago, and I kind of took this dual role. And the first person, my first event after that, was being on stage with Jessica Biel. And it's just, it feels like any nerves that I had, and that's been kind of neat taking the training wheels off over the years, it just went out the window. So honestly, no, I can say I don't have any nerves when it comes to that kind of stuff anymore, too. But it is neat. I think it's just, it humanizes the experience that, you know, you get starstruck as a kid. I mean, I can admit I had dreams of like hanging out with Macaulay Culkin back when Home Alone was cool, you know. Just that idea of idolizing somebody, it makes it feel like, hey, these are just people and you can meet them here. They want to come to Indiana and check out what we have to offer and share their movies with audiences.
Mm-hmm. And how did you originally get involved with film?
Well, I went to IU for communication and culture, which was essentially their film studies program back in the day. Now it seems like after I leave, all this cool stuff happens. They have the IU Cinema, which they debuted a couple years after I left, which is amazing. Definitely go down there and check out IU Cinema. John Vickers, founding director, is one of my favorite people out there, too. And then the media school is now, too, and I'm fortunate to be on their alumni board. But basically, they have these amazing state-of-the-art facilities for everything from production to film studies and everything else, too. So that is fantastic. But I went to IU, didn't think I'd do anything film-related necessarily with this degree. And so after working a couple different jobs, interned at Disney a few times, fell into graphic design, worked for the man for a while, if you will, knew I didn't want to do that. I signed up to be a volunteer at Heartland and met somebody at a community screening, and it went from there. I think a lot of the people on staff either started out as volunteers or seasonals or had that passion for film in some capacity. So I was a narrative film reviewer as a volunteer screener and stuff too to begin with. And it sounds very romantic, but it's like panning for gold. You are sifting for gold. And out of these thousands of movies, you're not going to find a lot of gold nuggets on the top layer, if you will, and stuff too. So, doing that and having to step down was, you know, I'll say unfortunate. I was kind of relieved, hey, I'm not at this top level anymore, too. But, yeah, we have over 60 people that watch the films to begin with, and it goes through the kind of this tiered system. And then I would say more at the top of the pyramid, upside-down pyramid, if you will. So as we sift for gold, hopefully I'll get more of either the fool's gold or the real stuff, and I'll ultimately make the decision. But it's a long process as well. But we're really fortunate to have dedicated people who are watching these films, and we guarantee filmmakers, we actually watch a movie all the way through, and we'll give you feedback even if you don't make it in.
Okay. And for people who don't go to the actual film festival, is there any way for them to watch these films after?
And that's kind of the predicament. You know, I think a lot of these films people have never heard of, and then after an independent film, this might be your only time to see the movie. This is really the theatrical run for many of these films. As a higher level indie, it might hit something like a Landmark or something, but that's not that many movies that come through. So festivals are these films' distribution model for the most part, too. But if a film is lucky enough to make it to the next level, especially with VOD and everything now, it's much easier for a lot of these films to get out in some capacity. But check our website. We have a monthly newsletter. We'll actually send you updates. We won't harass you and send you like a daily email and that kind of stuff, too. But, yeah, we let people know what's going on as well. We have events throughout the year that we might do a special screening of a film, like going to the Art Craft or Best of the Fest, something like that, too. But, yeah, go to heartlandfilm.org, check out our calendar, sign up for emails. We always let people know they can see these again. But it might be never. A film might never get released. It might be 3 years. But, anyway, we try to let people know about that for sure.
And do you consider yourself much of a film buff?
Oh, definitely. I think you really have to be in this area, too. That's why I transitioned. I used to be the director of marketing and then kind of took a dual role, so now I focus primarily on film programming. So, yeah, if you want to talk about silent film, you want to do all that kind of pretentious film nerd stuff, I'll be glad to do that. But, yeah, I definitely love cinema from the early days up to now. And, yeah, I just love following up with a lot of the kind of the news and especially the independent world and seeing that really the economy really change now with all these different streaming services and the availability of film, and it's just really neat. So yeah, definitely consider myself a film buff.
Have you seen anything lately that you've enjoyed?
Yeah, actually, I'm trying to think. I always keep up with all the Oscar stuff every year too, so I only have Call Me By Your Name left to see for the Best Picture. But I saw the post most recently this weekend. I have MoviePass, so I have a 2-year-old, so it's called Greg trying to stay up late for a 10 o'clock screening using MoviePass is what how it usually goes about. So I try to do 10:30 Thor Ragnarok, and that I admit I fell asleep in the middle. Not that it was a bad movie, but this guy's trying to push himself too hard sometimes. But I saw that, and then we have an award called the Truly Moving Picture Award we give to studio films as well. We don't disclose if the film doesn't get an award, but we, I guess I can say this now, but we saw a movie, Lean on Pete, which was from A24, and that just did get our award as well, too. And it's almost, Steve Buscemi's in this film as well. It's based on a book about this boy who's about 15, and he comes from a home where his mom left, his dad, something tragic happens, I won't go into it in the interview here and stuff, too. But basically, it's this coming-of-age story, but it's rated R as well. So you're like, okay, so coming-of-age, R-rated story, but it involves this horse. I mean, he likes to run, and he comes by this kind of a horse racing place near Portland, Oregon, where their family's kind of relocated and stuff, and it kind of goes from there. And I call it almost like this picaresque piece of Americana. And if you liked, A24 puts out amazing stuff, and if you liked the Florida Project, there was kind of some echoes of that in this project too, but I love that movie as well. But yeah, I think out of the other movies that I've seen recently too, I really loved Phantom Thread. I think about Paul Thomas Anderson, I think he always dips into the human psyche and you go into places that you would never expect. And I think it's funny talking about movies with my father-in-law. He's like, oh, the movie about the fashion designer. You're like, okay. If you're going to try to limit a Paul Thomas Anderson movie by just the basic synopsis or what a character does, you're really missing out on an experience and stuff, too. But, yeah, Daniel Day-Lewis, I'm not sold that he's never going to act again, but I love absolutely everything that he does as well. So that was neat to see that. And the score was amazing, too. Yeah, so I'll keep going if you like. But those are some of the most recent movies that I've seen. And I watched Citizen Kane last night, so if you want to talk about being nerd, you know, there you go.
So. I think the last time I saw Citizen Kane was in my high school film studies class.
Yeah, you know what? You see a lot of these movies, and I think you're forced to appreciate them at an early age. Mm-hmm. And I think now that you can kind of go back and appreciate that. And as someone who aspires to make movies myself at some point in time, I like to write on the side and stuff too. I'm very visual. So there's certain, I mean, this is what a lot of directors do. You kind of pick and choose scenes or things that you like from different movies and almost make mental notes of that. So there are a couple of things that have stuck with me, especially in Citizen Kane, some camera shots and stuff too, especially in The Office when they went, they dug into the ground. So you had that really low angle shot going up too. And that's, you don't see that a lot now necessarily, but that was really, really impactful for me. So, hey, if you'll go back to this interview someday and like, hey, Greg talked about that cool shot from Citizen Kane. It's in his Oscar-winning movie, so who knows?
Started here. yeah. Just final question really quick. I want to shift back to the film festival. For anyone who would want to submit a film, what's the deadline for 2018?
So Indie Shorts deadline is going to be late April is the super final deadline for that, and then middle of June is the super final deadline as well for that, too. But again, it's a tiered system as well for dates. So if you want to get it in a couple months before that, that'd be great. But we also have, you know, we have filmmakers from high school filmmakers. We have Indiana filmmakers, too. We have an award called Indiana Spotlight. So it used to be just one award for the fest. But now since we have one for the Shorts Fest and Indie Shorts, that means we're going to highlight somebody who has a short film, who's an Indiana filmmaker, and then in the Feature Fest as well. And actually something cool that I can announce now. We have that award, the Truly Moving Picture Award, and usually at the festival, we have some kind of neat premieres for Indiana that no one's seen. Like this year, we had Breathe, Thank You for Your Service, some kind of bigger Hollywood titles. We're actually going to be putting a $10,000 prize on that, so we're trying to bring more of the industry here to Indy and really make an event and make sure more people come here and they're part of this. And we're in a very cool spot, I think, right after Toronto. So a lot of the times these movies that come straight out of Toronto, we could be the second or third stop. It's been the case for Room and some of these other big movies, like Breathe as well. So we're really excited for that. So expect just more industry and kind of cool people coming to the festival for sure.
Film sociology correspondent McKenna Mays with Greg Sorvig, the director of film programming for Heartland Film. Just a reminder, March 2nd and 3rd is the Heartland Film Fest Best of the Fest. You can go to historicartcrafttheater.com www.filmsociology.org for more information. And mark your calendars, March 9th and 10th, Pretty in Pink, 16th and 17th, Anatomy of a Murder, 23rd and 24th, The Neverending Story, April 6th and 7th, All About Eve, 13th and 14th, Napoleon Dynamite. Friday the 20th at 7:30 p.m. is the Real Women Vintage Wine Series with Bridget Jones's Diary. Saturday, April 21st, the Cartoons for Cans fundraiser. Saturday the 21st at 7:30 p.m., the Brew and View event of National Lampoon's Vacation. April 27th and 28th, The Iron Giant. May 4th and 5th, Back to the Future Part 2. May 11th and 12th, The Wizard of Oz. May 18th and 19th, West Side Story. And May 25th and 26th, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. Once again, historicartcrafttheater.org. Okay, I recently shared these couple interviews that I did with McKenna as a part of what to do and what not to do in reporting. I think you've heard these before, but let's dip into the archives.
Hi, Matthew.
Hi, Padma. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys doing?
We're hanging here in Indianapolis.
I'm good. I'm good. We're just, we're sitting here drinking up some coffee. Very happy, jittery people.
Well, that's good to know. When it comes to summer, what is the first dish that you think of?
Well, you know, I think there's nothing so classic in summer as ice cream. And I'm going to show you how to dress up ice cream and make it into a fabulous dessert and give your guests a coffee all rolled into one. And the recipe is so easy, but if you don't write it down, it's on Nespresso.com. Basically, Nespresso makes these great espresso machines. Their coffee machines are renowned all over the world. And they basically have a Pixie machine, which is the one I love. It comes in a lot of colors. You pop the little capsule of coffee in. It's the best possible coffee. You make the espresso. You just take a beautiful, simple scoop of vanilla ice cream, put it in a coffee cup, pour the espresso hot over it, sprinkle some chocolate chips, and drizzle some caramel sauce. That is it. You could add nuts. You could add cinnamon. You know, you could add peanut butter chips. But that's the basic recipe. And again, if you're viewers are, you know, sorry, if your listeners are driving or whatever, it's on the website. Go to Nespresso.com.
Sounds like a good movie treat as well.
It's awesome, honestly. It, you know, they have this beautiful milk machine called the Arachino, and it's basically you just plug it in and it steams up the milk and gives you that foam, just like those high-end coffee bars all across Italy and Switzerland and France. It foams everything up. It steams the milk in 1 second. It's beautiful. Actually, probably about 30 seconds, but it's so easy to do.
Well, can you tell us a little bit of what's in store for season 10 of Top Chef?
Well, we haven't filmed it yet, so there's not much I can tell you. We're in pre-production right now. I think we're just all racking our brains and figuring out how we're going to top Texas from last season. I mean, we had such an incredible, incredible season, and we're just gearing to shoot. It'll probably be on the fall. And I think we're trying to shake it up again. I think you'll see a lot of surprises. I mean, you know, Charlize Theron and Patti LaBelle were on last season, so who knows who they'll come up with this season.
Padma, we can top Texas, Indianapolis.
That sounds good to me.
So I was curious, when you see somebody cooking in a movie, do you pay extra special attention to see if they're actually doing it right?
You know, that's a great question. I do, actually. I'm a big freak about continuity. Because, you know, I come from theater and I've done a couple of movies, and so I can always tell when there's not continuity or when someone's phoning it in. And, like, you know that scene in Jerry Maguire where Renee Zellweger answers the door? Watch it. When they cut to his view, her necklace is tied differently.
Ah, yes. So who can, movie-wise, who can cook?
You know what? Stanley Tucci can cook his face off. That is not... He is not playing. Everything in Big Night is very authentic.
Great
so
film.
So can Martin Scorsese. His first student film was a film about his mom's spaghetti sauce. He gave me a copy of it. It's brilliant.
And didn't she do all the cooking in that one kitchen scene in Goodfellas?
Yes. That's an incredible scene.
So anytime we're going to see you in a movie anytime soon?
I have a couple offers, but my problem is my scheduling. You know, mm-hmm. You have to really do one thing and do it well. I haven't been in a movie since I started Top Chef 5 years ago. My last film was for the BBC. I would love to do another film. It just has to be the right one and work with the schedule, which is not always easy. I'm just thankful for my job on Top Chef at this point.
Of course. Padma, thank you so much for your time. I really, really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Take care, Matthew.
All right, you too.
Hey, Matthew, how you doing?
All right, how are you?
Too bad.
Good, good. This is a film show here in Indianapolis. It's called Film Sociology on WFYI in Indianapolis. And the first thing everybody inside my building is asking, why am I talking to you? Or actually, why are you talking to me, I guess?
I heard that you're the guy that everyone wants to hang out with in Indianapolis.
Oh, you're
isn't that enough?
You're a better actor than you already are. No, you have. I know you have I believe it's the King of the Castle home upgrade.
Yeah, it's the Dove Men Plus Care Hair King of the Castle Home Upgrade. Basically, it's a chance for me to go into one real man's house and totally upgrade and do what I would want to do. Some fun. We've got fun prizes that we're giving away and things like that. So it's going to be not just an opportunity for me to go and hang out with somebody at their home and consult on what we want to do, but we're going to deliver these incredible prizes too.
You mean you're going to get rid of the beer posters from 1983 off the walls?
Well, you know, it depends. It depends what it is. I went into my brother's place one time, my older brother, and he had the Kramer up on the wall. And, you know, I couldn't take it down. It had too many fond memories for me.
There's certain wall art that I guess develops character.
It does. It does.
So how can guys? And by the way, the ladies outside the window of the recording studio are waving at you. So let that be known.
Tell them that I'm waving back.
Oh, I will. So how can guys enter and get interested, and how can they get in touch with you about this?
The easiest way is to go to the dovemencare.com/kingofthecastle, and that's got all the details on it, or through social media as well. But the best thing is, you know, people want to get in right away so they have the opportunity to get the application in. We're going to pick one real man across the country, and we're going to basically go in. We'll either do a real King of the Castle upgrade and put a moat into his home with a functioning drawbridge, or maybe we'll build the ultimate tree fort in the backyard so the kids have a strong place to play. Or it might even be something as well. We have authentic-looking British royal guards that will guard the house for a week and do a changing of the guard ceremony twice daily, things like that. So there's bizarre prizes, but all this stuff. It's going to be fun, and you know, we have things too, like a home automation and home security system, as well as an outdoor kitchen and dining room area. So they have tons of prizes to choose from, but it's going to be an incredible experience.
I'm curious, what home improvement shops have beef eater guards?
Only the ones that I deal with, let me tell you.
And do they have the bottles with their images on them as well?
Well, basically, this is what I'm thinking. I think if somebody comes in and they choose that prize, that, first of all, I think it's something that's going to be great for somebody to brag. You know, if you think about it, you know, a guy says to a girl, yeah, you know, come on over. You know, I've got this great place. Check it out. And she walks up, and all of a sudden, there's British royal guards there. She's going to think he's a king. So there's something going on. I think it's impressive. But if you're thinking longevity and the value of the home, then, you know, going with one of the other upgrades that we have that's hard value to the house, I think, is an amazing idea.
Now, are there themes like, you know, King of Thrones or Elsinore from Hamlet or Xanadu and Citizen Kane or even the Castle Anthrax from Holy Grail?
Matthew, where were you when we were doing the creative process here? These are the ideas that I need. And if I'm only relying on Drew to help me come up with ideas, I mean, we're going to fall flat.
Oh.
I need you. I need you in my camp.
Brother Dig, minutes into the chat. That's great. So I guess what other home improvement tips can one give you, especially if you're in the Midwest in the fall? There's simple things about having to call in the troops that folks can do around the house to make things better for the fall.
Yeah, there's a lot of maintenance that we say. You always want to do your maintenance in the fall just before you get into the winter, and then in the spring again before you have the warm weather come around and all, you know, depending on where you are, if there's snow melt off and stuff like that. But the biggest thing for going in the winter is, one, you want to make sure that your furnace is functioning the most efficiently that it can. So simply just changing out filters. You also want to make sure that you've got adequate insulation. So usually say if you haven't blown in extra insulation into the attic, that's something that's very easy to have a company come in and do, or you can do it yourself too. And then walking around and just checking the entire house for any leaks around windows, air leaks around doors, making sure all the seals are good. That's the first thing that you can do. Something else that people don't realize that helps with the bills a little bit, You know, everyone uses their fans, their ceiling fans in the summertime. They like that cool air blowing down on them. But your ceiling fans, especially if you have tall ceilings, 10-foot ceilings or 12-foot ceilings, if you reverse them in the wintertime, they actually recirculate that hot air that's rising. They recirculate it back down to the lower areas. So you'll find that your heating bill is lower if you use your ceiling fan in reverse.
But the toilet swirling, that's a different story.
Yeah, if you want your toilet to swirl the other way, you've got to go to Australia.
Okay, that's good to know. So what is next for you television-wise?
Right now, first of all, I don't know what you expect of me. I already have 3 shows that we're doing this whole time. But slowly we're taking over the airwaves. We have some other exciting projects coming up in the new year. You're going to get to see inside my house for the first time. You'll see what I actually am doing. I'm doing a massive project on my house in Vegas. And that's going to be a lot of fun. My favorite spaces to do are outdoor living spaces,
mm-hmm.
which is why with the Dove Men Plus Care contest, I'm doing the treehouse out back because I love doing outdoor spaces. It's a great way to entertain, a great way for the family to have a space so they don't have to always go out to a theme park or something. But you're going to see some pretty wild stuff there. And then a lot of other projects. You know, we're doing projects with companies like Funny or Die, and we're doing all these other digital vignettes online, so people can see those on hgtv.com and on our website,
okay. Some of the ladies are already asking, why isn't your house like Game of Thrones? So I'm not gonna we'll just leave it at that. So now I have to
I'll admit my house, when it's done, it's gonna be so much fun. We have everything from an infinity pool with a swim-up bar, a water slide going around a cluster of palm trees from the second story of the house, and a drive-in size movie screen that comes up on hydraulics.
Oh.
So if you guys are ever in Vegas, I expect that the whole station there, you're going to come in and you're going to visit.
Oh, those are fatal last words, my friend. and so, actually, by the way, in my house, this HGTV is the station my wife has on all the time when she's working. So I think you're spending a lot of time with the missus, and I need to talk to you about that.
You know, she sounds like a very smart lady with impeccable taste.
I call her sitcom wife, but then again, she makes fun of me when Candace and Genevieve are on, and I come screaming through the walls. So,
well, this is the funny thing. I laugh is when people say to me, and we'll come up, we'll do live lectures, and the wife will come up, and the husband's right there, and she'll just say, "There's only one thing I want to fall asleep to in bed, and that's you." And I feel really awkward and uncomfortable. And the husband's like, "It's true. It's true. I shouldn't put the TV in the bedroom."
This is a public station. We're not going to go there. Let's see. So, movie-wise, I guess, have you watched any movies lately? Do you get a chance to with 3 shows and all the stuff you got going on?
I do. I haven't seen as many movies lately as what I usually do, but I don't watch TV, really. So the only thing I like to do is sort of go and escape and do film. And, I own a film production company as well.
Yeah, I would say, what's the word on that?
Yeah, we actually are gearing up for our first big feature film. We've done a lot of independent projects. I did a lot of short films when we were younger, but our first full-length feature we're aiming to shoot next year, and that'll be a romantic comedy, a lot of fun. But I did see recently, is it Captain Phillips?
Yes.
I saw that. I thought it was fantastic. Tom Hanks is one of my favorite actors, and the way he portrays it just did a really great job. It's intense. It gets pretty intense.
Yes, it does.
Boy, if you were rattled off some films, I saw some that were a little bit more controversial. I saw Don John. As long as you can get past the uncomfortable subject matter, I thought it was really well done. I thought it was hilarious.
It is a standard romantic comedy. It just happens to have a lot of online porn, that's all.
Yeah, isn't that the sign of a true romantic comedy, though? I don't know.
Yes, it is. And, of course, some people will say if you're dating Scarlett Johansson and you're still going online, you're an idiot. But that's not for me to say. How much of the money pit is accurate, I guess, from your standpoint?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Interesting you say that, because I have come across some projects where it almost becomes comical how many problems we come across. And anytime it's a property like that, it was usually a previous owner was intentionally hiding the problems to pull the wool over your eyes, and I hate that. I think it's just a terrible thing to do. So I always say, if you come across a problem with your home, you fix it. You don't pass the buck on to somebody else. This is your home. This is your asset. You're responsible for it. Whenever we're doing a construction job, we always have a contingency in place to cover the what-ifs, and anytime you're doing a massive renovation, it is guaranteed you will come across something that you didn't plan because you couldn't see inside the walls or something was hidden. So that's what I always recommend. Do a contingency. I never do a contingency of less than 10%. If it's a known area with problems, or if it's an area that, you know, maybe definitely has asbestos or knob and tube or something like that, or if it's an older home, then we bump that up. You know, I've done the contingencies as big as 25% if it was an area where we knew there were definitely foundation problems and definitely plumbing issues. So you just have to plan ahead and be careful, and never, ever operate best-case scenario when you're doing real estate investment or when you're looking to renovate. You want to operate under worst-case scenario, and then anything that's better than that is just equity in your pocket.
Okay, last question. What's the better twin film, Parent Trap or Dead Ringers?
I'd probably go with Parent Trap. I think I'll go with that. Or Twins, if you want to go with the whole Danny DeVito-Arnie combo. You know, that was pretty comical.
Thank you, Padma. Thank you, Jonathan. All right, I should make a note that the other film opening this weekend is the Nick Parks animated feature Early Man for you fans of Wallace and Gromit and Shaun the Sheep. Also, go to the Film Yap and you can check out a slew of reviews and write-ups from the likes of Chris Lloyd and others. But Chris Lloyd did a write-up of the 1971 Western Valdez is Coming with Burt Lancaster, Susan Clark, based on a novel by film sociology guest Elmore Leonard. There are three Westerns that Lancaster did in a row, 1971, 1972. Lawman, Valdez is Here, and Alzana's Raid. And I have a special place for all three of those. So kudos to Chris about discussing Valdez is Coming. Hopefully we'll get him on the show soon to talk about it. Of course, Dead Man's Line, the true story of Tony Curtis. Is still in is out there. Be on the lookout for that as well. And of course, actually held up for another week, and I forgot to mention this on the show last week, so my apologies. But the Oscar-nominated short films and the Oscar-nominated live-action films, animation and live-action, two separate packages, are available at Landmark Theaters. That way, when you watch the broadcast and you've never heard of these, well, now you have a chance to view all of them. And what's great about these packages and the fact that we have an art house theater is that we are able to see, in this case, a really high-quality grab bag of animation and live-action shorts. So do yourself right and check those out. The Insult, of course, is still at Landmark Theaters. And with the exception of Dunkirk and maybe Get Out, you have to look. But all of the Oscar-nominated films are still in theaters, so there's plenty of films out there to see. All right, ladies and gentlemen, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there, from Academy Award winners to Black Panther to short films. No excuses. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!